This is one thing that I was going to wait a while before we talked about. Maybe we'll talk about it now so you can think about it. Because we all have to make some kind of plans for ourselves. It's a free concert from now on. That doesn't mean that anything goes. What that means is we're going to put the music up here for free. What it means is that the people who are backing this thing, who put up the money for it, are going to take a bit of a bath. A big bath. That's no hype, that's truth. They're going to get hurt. But what it means is that these people have it in their heads that your welfare is a hell of a lot more important, and the music is, than a dollar.
Shotgun in the sky, turning into butter. was advertised as an Aquarian exposition, 3 days of peace and music. As it turned out, the Woodstock Music and Art Fair was much, much more. Beginning on the afternoon of Friday, August 15th, 1969, and running somewhat accidentally until almost noon on Monday, August 18th, Maxie Asger's Dairy Farm outside of Bethel, New York, hosted the most extraordinary music festival of them all. There have been bigger festivals since then, and there have arguably been more impressive bills, but nothing will ever top Woodstock for a combination of music, community, spectacle, and something else. Call it magic, call it luck, call it divine intervention. Any way you look at it, 400,000 people were at Woodstock for 3 days of peace and music, and against all odds, that was exactly what they got. Woodstock is remembered for its lack of tragedy. It's remembered for the hippies who attended it. It's remembered for the mud. It's remembered for the brown acid. It's remembered for the psychedelic movie that documented the event. And it is remembered for the music. It was a career highlight for Hall of Famers like Joe Cocker and Sly and the Family Stone. It was the live debut of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. For relative unknowns like Richie Havens and Carlos Santana, it was a career-launching pad. And in its final hours, with an all-time legend on the stage, Woodstock produced the single greatest moment in the history of rock and roll. My name is Rich Larson, and this is The Weekly List. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to 95.1 KYMN Radio in beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota. Thank you for joining us again tonight on The Weekly List. As you're listening to this, today is August 15th, 2019, which means exactly 50 years ago, right now, the Woodstock Music and Art Fair was underway. So tonight we're going to hear a few of the highlight performances from the festival, along with what are now considered to be some of the iconic announcements that were made from the stage. We're going to talk about some of the people that were really heroes of Woodstock, but mostly we're going to talk about the music. Some of the most amazing music ever came out of that very famous cow pasture and that weekend in August of 69. But before we get into this, let's be honest about Woodstock. Woodstock was a fiasco. It was very poorly planned. They had to change sites 6 weeks before the concert, when a lot of tickets had already been sold. They were lucky as heck to come upon Maxie Asger, who allowed them to use their farm for the site, or they would have been there would have been no Woodstock, and there just would have been a whole lot of lawsuits. They didn't have enough time to really secure the site, so when people showed up and saw that there was really no one taking tickets, they called all their friends, and the 150,000 people that the organizers were expecting became 400,000, and it could have been a humanitarian disaster. In fact, Nelson Rockefeller, the governor of New York at the time, was constantly, that whole weekend, threatening to call out the National Guard to keep the peace, not really understanding that the people there were actually keeping the peace themselves. It cannot be overstated that this was a really, well, it was a unique experience, to be sure. But there's never really been anything like this before or since. When you've got 400,000 people gathered in one spot, that's a city. And over the course of 4 days, only two people died. Both were from tragic accidents, but it was nothing happened due to, you know, acts of violence or anything like that. Woodstock was a really peaceful party for for the hippie generation. And if you do research on Woodstock and you listen to interviews and talk to people who were there, the one thing you hear about Woodstock over and over and over again is one really simple phrase. It was really beautiful. Our first song tonight was Crosby, Stills, and Nash doing the song Woodstock, which was actually written by Joni Mitchell. Now, Joni had been invited to play at Woodstock that weekend, but had also been booked to play on Dick Cavett's television show. And her manager told her she had to go on TV, and she couldn't go to Woodstock because Woodstock was going to be a disaster anyway. So she's sitting in her hotel room in New York City, and she's watching these news reports, and she's hearing back from her boyfriend at the time, Graham Nash, who's telling her about all this wonderful stuff that's happening up there, and she's feeling bad, and the more she thinks about it, she's feeling worse and worse. So she grabs her guitar, and she wrote a song, and she put that song on her second album, Ladies of the Canyon, and it was a popular song at the time. But when Crosby, Stills, and Nash got a hold of it, that's what turned it into that, you know, gigantic 1960s era anthem. David Crosby, in fact, has said that Joni Mitchell captured the feeling of being there and the importance of what that place was better than anyone who actually was ever there. I debated about when I should play this next song in the show. I mean, what do you do with the greatest moment in rock history? Do you save it for the end? It's the, you know, the big finish. Do you put it in the middle? You know, I've just decided we're going to play this up front. We're going to talk about this right now because it's too good and too important just to keep under wraps. All right. So, in my opinion, Jimi Hendrix playing the Star-Spangled Banner at Woodstock is the moment where rock and roll peaked. It's the perfect storm. You have the most famous festival featuring rock's most famous guitar player playing one of the most effective pieces of social commentary anyone's ever heard. For a time of such immense social upheaval, Hendrix's Star-Spangled Banner is an amazing mix of both patriotism and outrage. I mean, he's playing the anthem pretty straightforward, but then in between those verses, you've got bombs going off and jets flying overhead and people screaming, and there's, you know, at the end he throws a little bit of taps in there. And it's just, it's brilliant. It captured the entire psyche of America at the time, and the confusion and the anger and the sorrow and the devastation that a lot of people felt about the state of the country at that moment. Now, keep in mind that Hendrix himself was a paratrooper in the U.S. Army. I mean, his fitness reports while he was in the Army weren't exactly the best. But he was given an honorable discharge because he injured his ankle during jump training. But had that not happened, Hendrix himself probably would have served in Vietnam. So, you know, in the end, you've got a soldier with the skills of a virtuoso. And only a guy like that could have really created this piece of music. I go back to about a month after Woodstock, Hendrix was on the Dick Cavett Show. And we should talk about Dick Cavett sometime. His interviews with some of the rock stars from the 60s and 70s are just, they're fantastic. But he's on the Dick Cavett Show, and Cavett called it an unorthodox reading of the Star-Spangled Banner. And Hendrix's quote was, you know, "I'm an American, so I play it." And I didn't think it was unorthodox. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Star-Spangled Banner, the greatest moment in rock history. So now, understanding that it's just not going to get any better than that, there's still a lot of really, really great music that we can listen to and that we're going to talk about. So let's just move on. The first day of the festival was the folk music day. And the scheduled opener for Woodstock was a band called Sweetwater. But they were delayed in getting to Woodstock because of the traffic jam that had happened when 400,000 people just decide they're going to show up in one spot. Logistically, it can be a problem. And if you've seen the footage, I mean, you know, that's got to be the worst traffic jam in history. In fact, by Saturday morning, the organizers of Woodstock had to get help from the military to actually helicopter in all the performers for the event. So it's time for the show to start. They don't have their opening band, but Richie Havens was there, and the crowd was in place. The organizers were nervous that people were going to start getting restless, so they asked Richie to go on. And Richie said he wanted to, but only half of his band was there. But he agreed to do it. So he went on, he played an amazing set. He played for 2 hours. And when he was done, the people at the backstage said, "No, we need you to play a little bit longer." And he had no more material. He had played everything he knew. They said, "You got to play longer." So he went back out on stage and he started to improvise. And he finds this groove with his guitar, and he's got a percussionist with him. He's got another guitar player, and they kind of lock in with him. And he's playing, and he starts just sort of pulling words out of thin air. And before he knew it, he had come up with what would become his signature song. Here it is. This is Richie Havens, live on stage from Woodstock on August 15th, 1969, with Freedom.
Guitar of Mike, please. Guitar Mike. Freedom, 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 freedom. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. A long way from my home, yeah, yeah, love. Singing freedom, 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 freedom. Sometimes I feel like I'm old. When I need my brother, brother, when I need my father, father, hey, mother, mother, hey, sister, yeah. When I need my brother, brother, hey, mother. Yeah.
Mr. Richie Havens.
To get back to the warning that I've received, you may take it with however many grains of salt you wish, that the brown acid that is circulating around us is not specifically too good. It's suggested that you do stay away from that. Of course, it's your own trip, so be my guest, but please be advised that there is a warning on that one, okay?
Don't hesitate to send your sons off before it's too late. Be the first one on your block. Have your boy come home in a box.
And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam.
Welcome back to the Weekly List. I'm your host, Rich Larson. That was Country Joe and the Fish with their own tongue-in-cheek bit of political commentary with the I'm Fixin' to Die rag. Country Joe and the Fish. Yes, wonderful. All right, so I've made it clear I have my personal opinion on what the greatest moment at Woodstock was, because I think it's the greatest moment, period. But there are plenty of people out there who disagree with me. A lot of people think that the greatest moment actually happened about 3:30 in the morning on Sunday the 17th, Sunday morning, middle of the night. See, because of the logistical problems with Woodstock, you couldn't really... Bands couldn't get their gear onto the stage. They couldn't get their gear off the stage. So there were these giant gaps in between performances. And because of that, the performances, which had been neatly scheduled and were supposed to finish, you know, around midnight, 12:30, 1 a.m., something like that, they went all night long and into the next morning. Janis Joplin took the stage at 2 a.m. and just gave a powerhouse performance. And when she was done, people thought, well, that's as good as it's going to get. I'm going to dig in. I'm going to get some sleep. So at 3:30 in the morning on Sunday, August 17th, Sly and the Family Stone took the stage and found a crowd that was pretty much asleep. And they proceeded to make it their goal to wake up every single person in that crowd, all 400,000 of them. And You know, they're throwing everyday people out there. They're throwing Dance to the Music out there. By the time they got to this next song, there were not only were all 400,000 people awake, there were 400,000 booties shaking out there too. The people who disagree with me that think that this was the moment in Woodstock, they actually always point to this song. So here is Sly and the Family Stone with I Want to Take You Higher.
Baby, 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 baby. good morning. What we have in mind is breakfast in bed for $400,000. Now, it's not going to be steak and eggs or anything, but it's going to be good food, and we're going to get it to you. It's not just the hog farm either. It's like the Ojai Mountain family and the Pranksters and everybody else that has volunteered and put in their time into the free kitchens. In fact, it's everybody. We're all feeding each other. We must be in heaven, man!
That was a Jefferson Airplane with Volunteers. I guarantee you, I don't know this, I haven't done any research on this, but I just about bet any amount of money. That was the only time the Airplane ever played a gig at 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Before that, we heard the legendary Hugh Romney, better known to history as the hippie supreme himself, Wavy Gravy. Screaming, "We must be in heaven, man!" He was part of the Hog Farm Commune. That was one of the groups that had been brought in by the organizers to help with crowd control and security. Obviously, bringing in hippie communes is an odd choice for security, but the peaceful nature of Romney and his people. That's a big reason that Woodstock didn't devolve into something really horrible. And, you know, keep in mind, organizers had been expecting about 150,000 people. So by Saturday night, there was no food left. All the food was gone. The sanitation was practically non-existent. The people at the festival had to survive on their own instincts and by the good graces of the people of Bethel, Washington, or Bethel, Washington, Bethel, New York, who actually were donating food to feed all these hungry kids. And the people like the people in the hog farm who were there to help and to keep things calm and to run the freak out tents. If you're having a bad trip, you could be brought to one of these places, and these guys would just help you remember, man, you know, everything's okay. You didn't take any poison. This isn't going to last forever. It's going to be fine. You know, it should also be noted that the meal that was served for breakfast in bed for 400,000 was raw oats mixed with honey and powdered milk and raisins and nuts, granola. And it was the first time a lot of people had ever experienced granola. I've heard other people say that granola was invented in Woodstock, and that's not true, because it was invented by the Kellogg family in the 19th century. But this was really the first time that granola had been introduced into the American culture on such a widespread fashion. Just another Woodstock milestone. So for a lot of performers, playing at Woodstock was a career highlight, but for Carlos Santana and his band Santana, it was career making. Before Woodstock, Santana was well known in San Francisco and in the Bay Area, but hadn't really made any inroads anywhere else in the country. But Carlos was really good friends with Bill Graham. Bill Graham, who owned, Bill Graham is one of the best rock and roll promoters in history. He owned the Fillmore in San Francisco, the Fillmore East in New York City. And the organizers had brought him in sort of at the last minute when they had to change sites to help even things out. And Graham said he'd do it on the condition that the organizers would put Santana on the bill. So they did. The performance that Santana gave made it onto the Woodstock movie, and that's where their career caught fire. And it's because of songs like the one we're about to play. Here is Soul Sacrifice on 95.1 KYMN, The One.
said everywhere I looked, I saw a dream. It wasn't your tears. It felt to me like dreams. Something grabbed a hold of me. Felt to me.
We have a gentleman with us. The gentleman upon whose farm we are, Mr. Max Yasger.
I'm a farmer. I don't know. I don't know how to speak to 20 people at one time, let alone a crowd like this. But I think you people have proven something to the world. Not only to town of Bethel or Sullivan County or New York State, you've proven something to the world. This is the largest group of people ever assembled in one place. We have had no idea that there would be this size group. And because of that, you've had quite a few inconveniences as far as water and food and so forth. Your producers have done a mammoth job to see that you're taken care of. They enjoy a vote of thanks. But above that, the important thing that you've proven to the world is that 500,000 kids, and I call you kids because I have children older than you are, 500,000 young people can get together and have 3 days of fun and music, and have nothing but fun and music, and I God bless you for it.
That was the man who hosted Woodstock, dairy farmer Max Yasger, a conservative, a Republican, a rural American, and a man who was completely won over by the peaceful spirit of the people who attended Woodstock. Before that was Janis Joplin with her just incredible rendition of Ball and Chain. Well, folks, that's just going to about do it for this edition of the Weekly List. Thank you again for joining us. We're going to leave you with, for many who attended Woodstock, this was the final performance of the festival. See, Sunday afternoon, Joe Cocker was the first scheduled performer. And he was Joe Cocker. I mean, he played an amazing set. And when he was done, the skies just opened up and torrential rain hit Woodstock. So for most of the people who were there, they decided, man, that's it. It's time. Let's go. And they left. The crowd that had been 400,000 by Monday morning when Hendrix took the stage to play the Star Spangled Banner was only down to about 30,000. But, you know, for most people, if this was the last song they heard, it was a pretty good one. Thanks again for listening. This has been The Weekly List. I'm Rich Larson, and this is Joe Cocker singing With a Little Help from My Friends. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Lend me your ears and eyes. trying not to sing out of key. Oh, baby, have you found? Tell me when you say no more. Oh, I can love my friend. I got to buy a thing. Everybody got the love I need. Well, I'm gonna pass it together. Nobody knows the way.
Thank you very much indeed. See you again. Beautiful.